Resolution 25-328, moved by Councilor Cuckinan, second by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:30.
6:30 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-329, moved by Councilor Haskins, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held August the 5th, 2025. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Back in the open session, so we'll do roll call once again.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Mike Heckman.
Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Clerk Administrator Carly Britton.
Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and their personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. We've had a little change in the agenda from what you might have in front of you. 11.1, delegations and presentations, has now been moved up before number 10, the public meeting. So this is the Canoe Procurement Group of Canada, group purchasing benefits for municipalities. And I believe it's Sarah Hubble, Client Relations Manager for Ontario and Nunavut. And you may have a slideshow for us. Okay, it's all yours, Sarah.
I'd like to start by thanking the Township for allowing me to be here tonight. It was a little bit of a trek. I live in Kingston, but I do hail from a small rural community, which is one of the reasons that Canoe was kind of built back in the 1930s to help small rural communities with their purchasing needs. So with this presentation, I'm going to take you through who we are, what we do, and the benefits that there are for your township, as well as any type of community across Canada. So first of all, who is Canoe? A lot of people, before we rebranded to that, knew us as a municipal association buying group. But who we are now is a Canadian not-for-profit group purchasing organization. So what that means is we take our entire membership base, we pool everybody into one, and we go out to market with RFPs that can help get preferred pricing for our members and help our communities and help our members save money and time. Currently, right now, we have over 5,000 members across Canada. Typically, most of those will fall into the MASH sectors, so municipal, academic, school, and healthcare. But we do work with a lot of First Nations communities, airport authorities, conservation authorities. Really, any public, not-for-profit entity can become a member of Canoe and leverage the contracts that we have in place. We have a couple of very important partnerships. First and foremost is with municipal associations across Canada. So we do not enter into the province or territory unless we have an established partnership with those associations. The reason for that is that for us as a not-for-profit to keep our lights on, suppliers who are awarded contracts with us have to pay administration fees. That's how we keep our lights on. We don't ask for any type of membership fee from our members. That administration fee is also split with municipal associations. They may use that for different advocacy work to offset membership fees for municipalities. Whatever they decide they want to leverage and use that money for, that's what they're able to do. So that's why we have that partnership with them. We're also partnered with Sourcewell. They are a government group purchasing organization based out of the state of Minnesota. We are their only Canadian partner. So we also leverage their membership base of about 50,000 to, again, get that preferred pricing for our members on a variety of different contracts. We are not an ordering platform or software, and we are not a substitution or replacement for your procurement teams. You still need to have policies and procedures in place, whether you're doing your own procurements or you're using group purchasing organization contracts like Canoe.
Sorry, it's been so expensive.
So this just gives you a quick snapshot of where we are currently active. So we have partnerships in every single province at this time except Quebec. Again, we don't enter in until we have that partnership established. We entered into Ontario back in 2019 and partnered with AMO, so Association of Municipalities of Ontario, and their business wing LAS, so Local Authority Services. So again, this is kind of our reach right now. This just gives a quick oversight to, you know, what the typical membership does look like with CANOE. So I always encourage our members, if you see any entity on here that lives within your community and you think that they could benefit from leveraging some of our contracts that are already in place, that's something they can either do through your membership, or that's something they can sign up on their own and leverage their own membership with us. I kind of touched on this already, so how we help our members. So the money side of it, saving money, is a really big component. So again, we go out with our buying power and we get that preferred pricing for our members. Another piece of the saving money side of it is a typical RFP, so a request for proposal, will take around 200 to 250 man hours. So what's the administration time that goes into that? When you're leveraging a CANOE contract, we have already completed the RFP process on behalf of our members by posting RFPs provincially and on national platforms to ensure compliance with various trade agreements and to also allow for suppliers nationally to respond to our RFPs and potentially be awarded contracts. So we have a lot of members who have leveraged our contracts who have been able to buy, for example, snow plows in 2 days, fully compliant with trade agreements and getting that preferred pricing for our contracts. So now that time of your team members within your municipal staffing can reallocate their time to other projects and that stack of paper that might be living on their desk. Other values for our members, so member support. I do oversee our members in Ontario, Nunavut, a few in Atlantic Canada. Our team is constantly growing. We have additional support members within Ontario now that are here to help our members through those first few purchases, coming to council meetings, going to various trade shows, whatever that might be. Currently, right now, we're actually higher than 377 suppliers. We're close to 400 awarded contracts right now, and that can range from everything from office supplies to heavy construction equipment. We are slowly getting into services, so we're getting into job order contracting. So you can actually leverage contractors local to do various projects that maybe your team might not be able to do, or going out to market, you might not have the scope and the idea of what you need to do in an RFP to get that service. Another big component of this is working with local dealers or distributors. So our contracts are typically awarded to the OEM, so the original equipment manufacturer, and they allow their approved local dealers to sell through that contract. The reason that it is awarded to the OEMs is because we are a national company and the dealership networks in BC are not going to be the same as in Ontario and Nunavut, so on and so forth. So the OEMs are awarded that contract, they provide the pricing and discounts, and then they support their local dealers to be able to sell through that contract to our members coast to coast. There is no membership fee and no minimum purchasing requirements, so some of our members will use CANOE contracts as much as they can. Others might just use it for capital purchases. It really comes down to what your community thinks is going to work best for you. And it might be small at first, but you might find that you're purchasing more and more through some of the contracts we have in place. It just really comes down to your awareness and looking at what we have available. And lastly, free quotes, cost analysis, and assessments. So just because you reach out to a supplier requesting a quote does not mean that you have to proceed with them. So we've had some members who have gone out for quotes and decided that they wanted to go up to market themselves, and they have that ability to do so. So you're not locked in just because you've engaged with any of our suppliers to request pricing. Next slide. Compliance. So the Canadian Free Trade Agreement, that is what we are bound to through our procurement processes. We make sure that all of our policies and our processes for running our RFPs are compliant with that, as well as the European Trade Agreement and any jurisdictional trade agreements between provinces. So any of our contracts that we have in place on our website meet all of those regulations and requirements, so you can go ahead and leverage those contracts knowing that you're fully compliant with all the mandates that are out there. We also have an open website, so we post the top three documents bolded there on our website without a username or password. So anyone within the community can go and look at any supplier's contract, master contract, the evaluation summary that we've done, as well as the original RFP that went out to market. So all of that is posted publicly. If you require any of the additional documents listed there, again, and that's something that is easily accessible that we can provide to you if needed. What we typically look for from our members is ensuring that you have group purchasing or cooperative purchasing language within your bylaws or your policies. And we do have examples from other members across Ontario that we are happy to share if you need to make an update. And then the last there is your notice of participation. So this is actually something that's outlined in Chapter 5, Clause 7, I believe, of the CFTA that requires you post a notice whenever you are leveraging any type of group purchasing contract. So again, this is just an education piece we share with our members. We provide you with that specific clause. We also provide you with, I would provide you with how Parry Sound has theirs posted, for example, so that you can make sure that you have that done. You're following what the CFTA says, and if a supplier wants to maybe challenge something that you have bought through one of our contracts, you would point them to that notice of participation, and if they have more questions, you would send them my way, and we would educate them on the trade agreements and how what you did through one of our contracts is fully compliant. And then this is just a quick summary to wrap things up. So the traditional versus cooperative purchasing steps. Every community is going to be a little bit different. Most communities will have between 10 to 11 steps. Other ones might have more. But essentially, all of these steps are being completed on behalf of our members. So you can see steps 1 through 11. We ourselves have a few more steps that we do add in there as well. But now, as a member of CANOE leveraging a cooperative contract, you have whittled those steps down to roughly 4, maybe 5 steps. So kind of that golden pathway. So just right there, you can kind of see the time savings that goes along with using a cooperative contract that CANOE might have in place. And that's it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions from council? Councilor Beckman.
So there are area municipalities that are utilizing the services of CANOE?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, so right now in Ontario, about 390 of the 444 municipalities are leveraging contracts in various levels. So Parry Sound is a great example. I believe they just bought 4 playgrounds through one of our contracts and are looking to leverage multiple others. I've got meetings with other ones that are just south of here as well. So a lot of communities are looking at the group purchasing contract route to save that time and the cost savings, whether it's the discounts or the admin time getting back. So there are quite a few, and I'm happy to share those with the team. So if you ever want to connect with your counterparts to see how that's going, we're happy to do that.
Great, thank you. Okay, any other questions? I'm just interested in the process itself. So council is usually involved in looking at the bids and making the decision, awarding a contract. You're saying that's taken out of council's hands and your group does it all?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So the way that it would work, it depends. So does council touch everything or is it over a certain threshold typically?
There are thresholds, yeah. Certainly within the procurement bylaw.
Sure. So we've seen some members where, you know, if it's a snowplow, for example, they'll put a council proposal together that has the CANOE, you know, language, we're pushing it through CANOE, here's the discount associated with the contract, here's the supplier that we're looking to leverage, here's the quote that we receive. So council would still be involved as much as you want to be, right? So whatever your process is for your team to leverage these contracts, I would just say make sure that they understand that so that they have to come to you with a proposal when they are leveraging a CANOE contract. We have example proposals that a lot of our members will use from other communities that have done just that.
So that's why, can you fine tune it to for a specific municipality what you want on the equipment, or are these very generic RFPs that you put out or tenders?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So the way that our RFPs work is we do solution-based RFPs. So we go out and we outline the depth and the breadth of what we're looking for heavy construction equipment, playground, and related equipment. That allows suppliers to provide their entire catalog that fits kind of that depth and breadth outline. Then that allows you as the member to build specifically what you need. The reason we don't do baskets of goods or 2 or 3 different spec variations is because what you're going to need for a snowplow is going to be a lot different than a member in BC or Nunavut. So by doing a solution-based RFP, suppliers can say, here's our entire catalog, and then you have the ability to build something that meets the needs of your community.
Do you still need input from our staff, though? I'm thinking of, you mentioned snowplows and
yep.
Things like that.
Sure.
I mean, even if you have the RFP or the tender,
mm-hmm.
They'll still be specific, this is what we require. And will they really have a hand in it? Because I noticed that you have also on there awarding the contract and actually doing the purchase order. That takes takes it right out of the treasurer's hands.
Sure. And through you, Mr. Mayor, so it really, the way that we train the staff when councils decided that the community can become a member and leverage contracts is if you have specs that you have used previously, or maybe you go to a neighboring community and say, hey, what was the spec you had for that fire truck? Can we borrow that? Can we change it a bit to meet our needs? You would then share that with one of our suppliers and say, here's what we're looking for. Help us build this through your contract. We've also had other members who have no specs at all, and they're able to engage with that supplier to say, we needed to do this, here's kind of where our ballpark budget is, and they're able to build that spec with the supplier. So there's no blackout period because that procurement process has already been done. So we've seen some of the smaller communities, I'm in that Kingston area, but north of Kingston, that have no specs, they go and engage with that supplier, and the supplier says, well, the model that you're recommending is too much what you need, let's go to this model. So there can be those potentials for savings there as well. But even how you issue payment, again, every member is different. That's why we don't dictate, you know, it's this in cement process. If you still want your treasurer to be a part of all of those conversations, or if you have a different way of payment, you just make sure that you communicate that with the supplier and your team so that when they're leveraging the contract, they know that these are the steps internally that you wish them to take when they're leveraging a GPO contract.
Councilor Zulak, looks like you have a question.
No, I'm just sinking in.
I'm just wondering at some point, because if we sit around the table and make a decision as well when we award the contract, that it sounds almost like it would be taken out of our hands. And there's a bit of a concern there, I guess, because it's going to be a recommendation from the group.
Sure.
That this is a supplier you would take. You have no knowledge of what dealings we've had with that particular supplier locally. And so I'm just wondering if sometimes, like, it's an unwritten rule that we often take the lowest bid sort of thing.
Sure.
But there may be reasons why we wouldn't. And I'm just wondering what Canoe works on. Do they look at the lowest or?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So no, we don't award based on lowest. So we look at ESGs, warranties. We do evaluate based on price. Typically, the heavier portion of the pricing evaluation is based on the discount that they're offering through the contract. And we don't dictate what supplier you use, right? In our heavy construction equipment program, there's 10 suppliers listed. So what we encourage our members to do is, first, let's look at cost of ownership. If your entire fleet is red, green, yellow, do we have a supplier that meets that need? The part to that is your team knows how to operate it, they know how to fix it, you might have spare parts, and maybe the service is just down the road. So through us and our contracts, you have the ability to make those decisions. If you don't have a specific brand in your fleet, let's say lawnmowers, you've got a multitude, you could, and say we've got, I think, 12 suppliers that can provide lawnmowers through contracts, you could go to maybe the top 4 or 5, and I would always encourage you to talk with the end user. Hey, out of all of these suppliers, which ones do you know that have a brand or a piece of equipment that you would like to work with? And you reach out to those ones. You could also invite those suppliers to bring that equipment to site for the end users to test out. We've had a lot of our members that have started to do that, just so that, you know, we've always bought this one brand, but maybe there's something else out there, and a couple of times they've actually switched. What we're seeing a lot of other members do is based on delivery right now, right? So you have a multitude of ways to decide which contracts you want to use. You don't have to go based on lowest. There's multiple awards. We don't award to just one. So it gives you a lot of flexibility to reach out to the supplier that can best meet your needs.
Yes.
So now I'll say.
Now you have.
So, but in the end, the council has the ultimate decision whether to take that
through you,
or not.
Mayor. Yep. So,
with no repercussions.
Nope. So let's say that your public works team comes to you and says, we need to buy a snowplow.
Yeah.
We've reached out to these two suppliers because we've got these two brands in our fleet. And they go and get quotes. They come back to the proposal and say, here are the quotes to the Canoe contract. Here's the discount savings to the contract. Here's the delivery time of these units. That can come back to your team, to council. And you guys can still review it. You guys can still decide if which one you want to go with, and have your end users, your experts, explain which ones maybe they think would be best as well.
And we can also decide whether we don't want to do it
correct.
At all.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't. I mean, once you get a quote, like, you can get a quote, you can review it. We've had a lot of members that have gotten those quotes and decided that they didn't want to move forward, and they've gone. So you have that flexibility. Once you sign something, that's different. Like if you sign a PO to that supplier, a little bit different. But again, there's a lot of flexibility there up until that point.
Now, when you get to a stage where you're dealing with a supplier, they've offered a certain date when they're going to have it available.
Mm-hmm.
It's not available. Who negotiates with them? Is that the township then, or is that kind of...
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So typically, we encourage the township to have that open dialogue with the supplier constantly, and that's how we train our suppliers as well. If there are ever any hiccups or need where you need Canoe to come in and assist with anything, we're here for that. That's why we've got a contract team in place. We've even got a procurement legal team in place. We've got our client relations team in place. So we always encourage our members to make sure that you're constantly engaging with that supplier and understanding all those details. But if you ever need us to step in and assist, we do have contract and supplier teams in place as well for that.
Now, to be a member, there's a contract that has to be agreed to.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So it's a one-page membership sheet. All it asks for is your address of your municipal office and who the main contact would be for the account that we have in our system, and that's it. So there's no term contract. Like I said, there's no minimum spending requirements. So we have members that signed up in 2019 and haven't really used Infuse because transition, and they have no idea that they're members, and there's no repercussions for that. So you sign up with just that information on that one page. You get a membership number. We do a training session with your departments, and then they're able to leverage those contracts how your council decides you want them to leverage it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any further questions from Carly?
I think it's important to note that if the township were to proceed with Canoe, that all procurement wouldn't have to go through Canoe. We can pick and choose as to what we want to use with Canoe. Mm-hmm. Say we have a backhoe in the budget needing to be purchased. We have equipment that we use currently. We have an inventory of supplies in the shop. So if we're wanting to specifically go with one dealer, the Director of Public Works can still come to council and say, this is within the budget, this is what I'm looking for. I've been on the Canoe site, which all members of council can also view the site to see what he's looking at. These are my top three choices, and then give the power back to the council to award. He can do all the due diligence and the research. Canoe's already done the procurement process, so it is a bit more simpler sometimes for big capital purchases, say like a backhoe or a lawnmower.
Okay, that's good to know.
Wonderful. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Just wondering if anybody from the public, since it is an open session here for a delegation, any from the public have any particular questions about Canoe? What they could offer? Yes, sir.
We just need a
microphone of some sort.
Lawrence Rubin, I'm just curious, I understand you're not for profit, but how do you fund your organization?
Great question through you, Mr. Mayor. So in any of our contracts, which anyone in the public and anyone in council can find on our website, there is a section in the RFP that outlines an administration fee that suppliers have to pay. It's also outlined in our contract. So at the time of award and negotiation, suppliers will submit what they deem is a good administration fee that they would pay on every sale that they do through their contract. So just for example, they can be percentages or they can be a flat dollar amount. So let's say a supplier picks 2%. 1% of that would come to Canoe to keep our lights on as well. And then a portion of that also goes to Municipal Association, which is why we have those partnerships in place. So that's how we stay funded as a not-for-profit. So the members don't have to pay membership fees and aren't the ones that are doing that. It's the suppliers to that administration fee.
Now, if the supplier is not a member or belong to Canoe,
mm-hmm.
can they still bid on the RFPs?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So the way that our process works is our contract terms can range, but they're typically about 4 years long with the optional 1 year extension. So if a original equipment manufacturer does not have a contract, they would have to wait until we go back out to market for that RFP. What I always encourage, especially the smaller businesses or smaller dealers to do, is see if their OEM has a contract in place. Because we don't award to local dealers, again, as a national entity, the original equipment guys have those contracts, and then they allow their approved local dealers coast to coast to sell. So typically, if there is no OEM contract in place, you'd wait till that goes back up to market, and then that OEM would respond, hopefully be successful and be awarded a contract, and then their approved local dealers would sell through that contract.
Okay, Councillor Tyler.
procurement process that we're not quite used to. It almost seems like you have an established or preferred suppliers that that a lot that the municipalities or the whoever the client is works with. So if they're not part of the preferred or established client base, they're not part of the CANOE and negotiations with say the municipalities. Is that sort of how it works?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So you have to remember, when we go out to market, we post that RFP nationally. It's posted for, I believe it's whatever the minimum is in CFTA, 40 days or so. That's open to all suppliers to respond to when that goes out to market. The ones that are awarded contracts have gone through that procurement process. Just if you were to go out to market yourself, once that closes, you know, if that's who you award, that's who you award, similar to us. Once it closes and we go through that process and evaluate and award, those are the ones that are in place. Now, there are going to be some that miss the boat and aren't going to be able to respond, but again, that's where you have that flexibility. If there is a dealer who their OEM doesn't have a contract and you do want to give them the opportunity, you're going to have to go out to market yourself and do that full procurement process.
So the timing of when our municipality may require to put out a tender might not align with the timing of the group sort of purchase that's going out. And but would you still put out a tender specifically for that one item for the client or municipality that you're dealing with?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. So we don't do member-specific RFPs. We do program-specific. So we'll do heavy construction equipment, we'll do office supplies, we'll do audit services. So we go out for those kind of big program pieces. And then when we award, those contracts are in place for their term. So if you don't need to buy a backhoe until 2027, we could already have a contract that's been in place and it's in year three of its term, and you can leverage that contract. So there are certain things. We have some members right now who want pool chemicals. We're out to market right now for that. So we don't have that contract in place. So depending on when you need those pool chemicals, you may have to do your own RFP, or you might be able to wait until we do that award, see who those awarded suppliers are, and then you can go ahead and leverage those contracts. So there is a bit of a timing piece to it sometimes, but I would say most of the contracts we have in place, we have about 390 awarded suppliers and over 80 programs available to our Ontario members. So we do check a lot of the boxes of what a lot of municipalities are looking to buy right now.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Any further questions, Carla?
I'd encourage council to go look on the CANOE's website as well. It's incredible to see the vast majority of products they tender for. Something as simple as the arena windows on the ice rink.
Yeah.
I don't know what the formal is called.
Yeah.
Yes, but we don't have a local supplier of that, so CANOE's done the work for us to get all the prices within the province to ensure that we're getting the best price, and we don't know who all those local suppliers are, or you know, even in the GTA. So for specialized products, I see that being a benefit as well.
Great, thank you. Any further questions on the voting? Not from council. Well, thanks very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
And
thank you so much for your time.
Hopefully have a safe drive home. It's
thank
a,
you.
And a long trip for the sounds of it.
Lots of audiobooks.
And we really appreciate that you came in person.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, Sarah.
Thanks.
We have resolution 25-330, moved by Councillor Pekkanen, second by Councillor Ryland, that it be a result that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from the CANOE Procurement Group of Canada, Group Purchasing Benefits for Municipalities by Sarah Hubble, Client Relations Manager for Ontario and Nunavut, for information purposes. Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-331, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby move into a public meeting at
6:59 p.m.
to consider the following matters. Number one, the draft building bylaw number 2025-42 under the authority of Section 7 of the Ontario Building Code Act 1992. And number two, review road allowance closure, Sunny Shore Park Drive. We'll just have some background with this public meeting, and certainly the public is allowed to participate, but I'd ask that any questions be directed through the chair. And we would ask as well that you save any of your questions or any comments until council's had an opportunity to comment on the issues. And I'll turn it over to Harvey for a little bit of background. We'll do the draft building bylaw first of all.
The township was looking at the draft fees and charges bylaw. Within that bylaw are fees respective to buildings, so respective construction, demolition, change of use, and conditional permits and inspections. Chief Building Official was unable to attend tonight, but he did look through the bylaw some months ago and make changes to the fees. When you change the fees within the fees and charges bylaw, you also need to change the building bylaw. He's updated fees to be concurrent with neighboring municipalities and bring us up a little bit. As well, we've updated the road damage security deposit form as well. And if council has any further questions, I can bring them back to the CBO for a comment.
Can I just ask a question first, Carly? So why is the CBO not here? Because there's also something else on the agenda that involves him with the septics?
He's currently on vacation. It was just unfortunate timing.
Okay, so he's on vacation?
Correct.
That would have been good to know.
Okay, any particular questions of the bylaw itself? Not necessarily just the purpose, but the details that are here. Councilor Ryan?
Like anything, we're revising a bylaw. I would prefer that we see track changes turned on. In other words, so we compare the original document or the document in force today versus this one and see what it is. I don't have any particular issues. I've read through it all. But honestly, without knowing what the previous version said, it's very difficult to make a judgment on the matter. And I would like to think that for any bylaw that we're doing, that we would get a document with track changes turned on, or red line, as some people call it. But, it's a big concern to me, enough of a concern that I would propose that if we don't have that, that we should defer this item.
Okay, Councilor Kiker.
I agree, and that's the first thing I requested was a copy of the previous bylaw so I could do a line-for-line inspection to see what changes have been made. And as well, trying to find the previous bylaw was... I couldn't find it, so I had to contact the clerk administrator. And through the process, looking at some of the other things that were in place for building permits, such as road damage security deposit, it references pursuant to bylaw 2008-17 as amended by 2011-21. There should be a hyperlink on that form, so it will bring you directly to that bylaw. So if you want to determine, what this security deposit is based on, you can actually look at the bylaw. And same with the application for entrance to private lands in accordance with bylaw 2008-27 and amended by bylaw 2019-13. Once again, hyperlink, so the anyone that's reviewing this information can actually look specifically at the bylaw itself. And in the proposed bylaw that we're discussing now, it refers to alternative solutions, bylaw number 2012-08A. So once again, it'd be nice to be able to look and refer to that that specific bylaw to see what it's actually referring to. But in specific to this public meeting, one of the things that is usually taken into consideration is that there's a report provided to the council to be able to determine, and provide rationale for changing or imposing the fees, which in 2018, when council was reviewing the changes to the bylaw permits fees, there was a report provided so that it would provide a rationale, because it's, the basic principle is that the fees are not permitted to exceed the anticipated reasonable costs of the building department. We don't have that information. We can't make that that use that reasoning that, you know, these changes are being made because of that the expenses are exceeding the revenue coming in. So there's no rationale to make these changes except for, oh, it's going to align with other municipalities' fee structure. Well, if our building department is being fully funded by the current fee structure, then that's there is no reason, according to, you know, the spirit of the Building Code Act, to actually make any changes.
Okay, all valid points. Whether I'll put it to council, whether you want to proceed, I have a number of comments about this actual document, but if you want to redline and compare to the other, then we can put all this on hold. It's going to have an impact on the fees and charges bylaw that's coming up as well, because it's part of that section E, I think it is. Councillor Keckman?
And usually the third reading isn't held for at least another, you know, to the next council meeting on something that will impact individuals, and maybe there will be no changes because there's no rationale to make the changes.
Presumably, would allow an opportunity for Chris to attend the meeting that we do plan to do, if we do defer it, and I admit that's a bunch of ifs, but it would be preferable for me to have him here to describe or explain components of the document anyhow. So.
Yeah, Councillor Zulak?
So do we need a motion to have him attend?
I'm thinking, from what we experienced, yes. We've been trying regularly, I guess, to have different staff members attend when issues come up to deal with them, public works superintendent, et cetera. So we did have a motion at the beginning of our term. It's sort of, I don't know, collecting dust somewhere, I guess. So, yeah, I would think a motion to that effect, I think, would be useful.
Okay. Have him attend the next council meeting? Would he be able to attend that, do you think, Carly?
Yeah, I can speak to him.
Yeah.
We're basically deferring them until such time
it
as
it sounds like, unless you want to go two readings, as one suggested, put out there. So.
I prefer to see the whole document before even
yeah.
in one reading.
Yeah. The only reason I mentioned that was. Usually, if we were going to do first and second reading, we would do third reading until there's an opportunity for people to review the documents. Well, we're missing one of the documents, so the previous building bylaw is not in the package for anyone to see.
So there's no sense in passing first and second reading if we might change the document.
And I think, in all honesty, if we're going to use track changes or red line again, as some people call it, I don't really want to see two physical documents where I have to read line by line or possibly even word by word to compare the two. I mean, Word is quite capable, Microsoft Word, that is quite capable of identifying any change, no matter how big or how small, and makes the reader's job a lot better in terms of understanding why. And I think it would be a mistake to have, potentially a mistake to have a meeting without Chris here, because who knows what questions we probably have or what comments we have about the proposed document that he wouldn't be able to answer and make it much more quick, much more succinct anyhow. So.
Yeah, well, I was able to look at the two documents side by side, and I prefer that method as opposed to leaving out the Word or AI or something, because as I read AI, there's so many mistakes.
Yeah.
Making statements about McKellar Township that aren't true. So I prefer to see the two documents right in front of me. I was able to do that, but I think it makes sense to be able to compare. There are some technical things, though, that I think we could probably just clarify now so that we don't have to deal with that the next meeting. I'm just looking at the numbers, and I see 4.1.3. I think what's happened is just a transposing of numbers. 4.1.1.3, it says it should be 4.1.3.1.
Mm-hmm.
So the 3 and 1, I think, have been transposed, whether you're following that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 4.1.1.3?
No, 3.1.
I see your point, I didn't notice it when I read it, but.
See, 1.3.2, 1.3.3, so the first one should be 1.3.1.
1.3.1, yes.
And on the next page two, it says 4.1, we've already got a 4.1, so that should be 4.2, change of use permits. And then your first subsection would be 4.2.1, instead of 4.1.1. Right underneath there, it says 4.1.1.
Right.
That would be now 4.2.1. And that, all the way through, you follow through, and 4.2 down below becomes 4.3. And then 4.3 becomes 4.4. And then once we get out of the fours, we're okay. Because then we move to 5, and 6 is okay, and 7, 8, and 9. The date, neither here nor there, we're not really dealing with it tonight. It will be deferred, but it sounds like it's my vote. But that should have been the 5th of August instead of the 2nd. And then there are various other technical things that I think we can talk about. And I guess the thing maybe that Chris could bring to us, it gets confusing for the layperson, even people sitting here on council. We're not necessarily in the building department. It talks about the Ontario Building Code, and then it talks about the building code. Is it still the Ontario Building Code? And a lot of the sites talk about Ontario's apostrophe S building code without the Ontario as part of the title. So, I mean, that should be clarified. And then they have different, say, regulations that go along with that as well. And I think we need that clarified, what we're actually working with. Because you have the Building Code Act, but then there are regulations, too, that we have to be aware of. I think it's good to look at all of those. But as said before, I think it's important to look at what's in place now and do the comparison of what changes are being made. Because I had to go right back to, mentioned already by Councillor Keckin in 2008-17. And that would be one that would be repealed too if we proceed with this. But I was fortunate to be able to find that. The layperson wouldn't be able to. Unless it came to the office, I guess, and then you'd have to go searching for it. So I like the idea of the link for anybody just online to even be able to do that. I'm not sure what's involved technically with that, but I think that would be useful.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving forward, we're getting in the habit of repealing bylaws and not amending them. So when fees change, we always repeal the whole thing and put a new bylaw number, because then staff, too, will have to chase multiple bylaws to see what happened in the past and ensure you're not missing anything. So just to keep it clean, we're going to repeal a lot more going forward and have a new bylaw number.
Well, that makes all kinds of sense, because you are bouncing all over. Councillor Pecker?
Well, yeah, so I guess you were sort of discussing some of the technical aspects in here, and but I guess we can wait until the next version.
How technical is it?
Well, it's just where it's referring to Schedule B in 4.4.4. It should say Schedule A, not Schedule B. But, you know, that's not anyone else could know, because they haven't seen the previous versions.
Just try to find Division C, Section 2.1 of the Ontario Building Code, too. You have to look on through it all and get it down to Division C. A and B are the longest ones, and then the C is at the very bottom of the page. But it can be found, but 4.3, for instance, alternative solutions. And I'm not sure if we even need that reference to that bylaw, because it's now in the code. Okay, how does council wish to proceed with this? We have. What do we do with the other one? That was just to go into the close, then, or the public meeting, yeah.
Yeah.
So we this either during the public meeting. I think we come up with a public meeting and then do the resolution.
Yes.
So it is for the public though, so if there are any comments, it may be deferred here, but on what you have available in the agenda package, on the construction, demolition, change of use, conditional permits, and inspections, that bylaw. It would appear that you're going to have another crack at it if you wish to come back, so if we can get the CBO here as well. Anybody online have any particular comments? Okay, that portion of the public meeting then would be closed, and we'll move on to the road allowance closure, Sunny Shore Park Drive. And I think Charlie has some background on this, why we're going this route, because this started a number of years ago, but there were some things overlooked, I guess. I won't call them mistakes, but just things that weren't done properly, and so we'll get it all straightened out so we can follow a plan moving forward. So, Carly, do you have a bit of background on that one?
Yep. September 17, 2018, the council then supported in principle the sale of part of the municipal road allowance fronting plan 294 Block K. And further, the deeming application be completed to merge the newly acquired property with the plan. The applicant did have survey complete and was working through the processes. Unfortunately, during the duration of this application, there's been multiple staff changeovers, and unfortunately it got lost in the system. There was never no public meeting to let the public know that the township would be deeming these lands surplus and selling them to the applicant, so that's the purpose of today's meeting. At the time, there was an agreement of purchase and sale signed between the applicant and the township. That has been mutually released, and we are proceeding forward with the road allowance closure policies that we do currently have in place. So we have put notices out to utilities and neighbors. I had one neighbor call in support of the application. And we have heard from Bell Canada that they will require an easement over the property. I've communicated that to the applicant, and we're looking at doing a blanket easement where Bell usually has an easement request, so does Hydro, so we are just waiting on their reply. The draft bylaw later in the agenda is to stop up and close the lands, deem the property surplus, allow easements where required, and have the authorization of sale for the consideration of $5,000, which was agreed upon years back. That money was transferred to a lawyer's trust account and has been sitting in trust for multiple years. So this council is looking to keep that consideration not the same, as the applicant has spent years doing this application and it hasn't come forward. In the agenda package further on as well, there will be a deeming bylaw, as this parcel is in a plan of subdivision. So for the two properties to merge on title, the applicant's current property and the property they'd be acquiring, we need to pass a deeming bylaw. I've been working with the township solicitor on this file, and if council has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Excellent summary.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's worded, people might be concerned that we're closing Sunny Shore Park Road. No, not selling that. It's a portion of it, and that's been run by the Public Works Superintendent, I guess the Director of Operations in the past, and we can still function as a township. It's not really detrimental to what we want to do. So people in there still will have the road that they've always had. This is to help the property owner. And it's been over a number of years, as you said, and we're just trying to resolve it. Nothing's really changed. We're not trying to stop it from happening. We're just going to proceed with it and make sure it does happen. So if council has any particular questions, concerns, and I would open it to the public as well with any comments, questions, whether that's all clarified. We're familiar with the whole program, but the layperson sitting there saying, you know, what's going on? So you may have questions. wrapped this up, and it's good, as you say, that the person is still interested in acquiring this piece of property and will do it legally and proceed with what he has to do. The easements, it's interesting because sitting on the planning board too, there have been some requirements of other townships that they actually specify on a plan, registered plan, that they, where the easements are going to go, and that's quite often difficult for the utilities. They like the blanket easement, as you mentioned, so that, and we run into problems with that too. We want to widen the road, and suddenly that's exactly where the hydro has chosen to have the easement, put up a pole. So that gets costly, but it's pretty difficult for them at this stage to say where they would actually need something. Okay, thank you. So we'll just exit the public meeting with one resolution here, I guess. I'm not sure which one, but.
Well,
yeah, so
I'm not sure.
I'll leave that one, and then do the exiting first, and then
give them the second
one. Okay. And then the third one. Okay. Resolution 25-332, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into regular session at
7:21 p.m.
Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Yeah, I guess we could do that. We could replace the one to do the readings with this one.
Right.
Sure.
I think you got right to the time to keep it all clean. Did the same with the other. Is there anything there?
No, that wasn't any different thing.
Okay. Just the deeming bylaw later? And the,
yes.
Okay.
Yep. And the bylaw to close.
Right. Okay. So those following the agenda, still following? We have number 14, Miranda. So resolution 25-333, moved by Councillor Haskam, second by Councillor Zulak. The result of the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby approved the minutes of the July 15th, 2025 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. To 15.1, resolution 25-334, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Keckman. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the zoning bylaw amendment application submitted by Christopher Moffat, proposing to rezone the property located at 70 Burnett's Road from Waterfront Residential 2, WF2, to Rural, RU, as required by consent application number B05/2024, Moffat. Further, the council deems the application to be complete in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act. Discussion? This one's bounced around a little bit, but are we finally at a stage to deem it complete? Okay. Further questions? I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. We have resolution 25-335, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has no objections to the approval of consent application number B14/2025 Ward, as applied for by Cameron Ward, subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland is required in the Township of McKellar Fees and Charges Bylaw. Number two, 911 addressing for the proposed new lot. Three, that the applicant convey any portion of Lakeshore Road for severed and retained properties 10 meters from the center line to the Township of McKellar. Number four, payment of any applicable planning board fees. And number five, that written confirmation be received from the public works superintendent that an entrance permit can be approved. Discussion? Do we have Patrick online tonight?
No.
No. And we talked about the minimum distance separation, and that was done for the Ward farm operation, but it wasn't done for the Ridge Moor. own property, but also doing it for the township for a while. So if there are any questions on the minimum distance separation part of it, it's not in here as a requirement because it's already been done for the two farms. But you might have some questions. There was the question of, and I think this was through the Secretary of the Planning Board, why we asked for the 10 meters even on the retained portion. That's fairly common in all the municipalities. I noticed that sitting on the planning board, that they're just talking about the applicant's property. They don't necessarily separate it into severed and retained, but that's fairly standard. It used to be, years back, the township used to have a clause in there, should a survey reveal that the property is owned by the applicant. And that was a little misleading, apparently, because does that mean that the property owner has to do a survey to show that they might own 10 meters of the center line, a portion of it? What if they don't do a survey, except for the actual severed piece? So it's just set out there now. It's on the severed and retained portions. And I don't know whether we'll have any comments on that or not. One thing I did notice, and this has happened a couple times now, I'm not sure the actual procedure. This is sent back to the people. We had a comment that the retained land was improperly described on the application form. It still is. Nothing has changed there. And I would think it should go back to the applicant to make the corrections, as we did with the previous one with the Moffitts. With the Wards, it's exact same figures for the retained that we have for the severed. And obviously retained is about 10 times larger. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking the application should be accurate with the description of the property. Nothing really is going to change as far as what they're proposing to do, but the description's incorrect. So council will have to make the call whether you want to defer this one again and get that corrected, or whether you're willing to go with what's on the application. Councilor Zula?
I think we need to defer it and get the proper, so that it's on record.
It's just that there aren't any questions later. I think the retained is there with the property description. It has the actual distance. Again, in the application, it's not accurately stated. So I tend to agree with you that, and I'm just saying the procedure itself probably should be cleaned up a little bit so that the person gets a chance. I'm not even sure if this went back to Mr. Ward or what happened after we deferred it to that point for the second minimum distance separation request. And maybe what we need to do is, well, we did point that out, I think, that it was incorrect at the last meeting.
Maybe
that wasn't communicated to anybody, so I think it should be. But.
Yeah, one thing, but if we did defer it, and I hate deferring things, especially over such a small error, which is obvious by the drawings, so the intent, but wouldn't it delay the application at the Perry Sound Area Planning Board, I believe, if we pass this at our next council meeting? That would still be in time for the next Perry Sound Area Planning Board.
That's true, it's the end of the month. So.
Yeah, so if we want to. So there wouldn't be a big delay for the applicant. You hate doing that to people, but in this case it wouldn't delay them to make that correction.
So just out of information sake, interest sake, that how does that change after they get made? The actual application form itself and the description of the property. Does that go back to the property owner who's filled it in?
Yes, I'll bring it to Patrick's attention. I think it just got missed at the last meeting because the conversation then went to the minimum distance separation. So I think we forgot to touch base on the application. So I'll inform Patrick and then he'll then inform Mr. Ward and get the application.
So he just has to go in and see Patrick and change it.
I've just heard from a couple of counselors that haven't put this to a vote yet. It sounds like a deferral from a couple, but I'll put it out to everybody. Any comments?
That makes sense to me.
I would support deferral too. So.
Okay, I'll call the question then for deferral. All those in favor? None opposed?
And it's on the drawing as 320. Meters for the retained, so no measuring has to be done physically or anything.
No.
Just scratch the 60, put the 320. Mm-hmm.
Okay, to 16.1, I have resolution 25-336, moved by Councilor Peckman, second by Councilor Ryan. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the draft minutes of the June 12, 2025 meeting of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee for information purposes. Discussion? I think they're paring it down a little bit when I look at it.
Yeah, it's a little smaller.
Yeah. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to 16.2, resolution 25-337, moved by Councilor Haskins, second by Councilor Azulay. The result, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the June 4th, 2025 meeting of the Township of McKellar Historical Committee for information purposes. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to 17.1, resolution 25-338, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Peckman. Whereas the personal identification sign located at the entrance of 6 Little Bear Lane exceeds the maximum size permitted under bylaw number 2004-17, section 2.08D, and whereas the sign has existed for an extended period of time, has minimal impact on the surrounding area, and is consistent with the general intent of the township's bylaw and official plan. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby permit the existing personal identification sign at 6 Little Bear Lane to remain in place, notwithstanding its non-compliance with the size limitations outlined in bylaw 2004-17, section 2.08D. Discussion? Maybe a little background there too. We had the bylaw enforcement look into this.
Yes, we received a complaint from the property owners at 8 Little Bear Lane is a private road down Brownlee Road. The only persons that travel past 6 Little Bear Lane to access their property are the persons at 8 Little Bear. This cottage sign has been on the property for 17 years. It does exceed the allowable size for a property identification sign. As you can see in the attachment, there's a picture of the cottage sign. The bylaw enforcement officer hasn't received any other complaints for this sign as well. The dwelling at 8 Little Bear cannot see the sign located at the end of 6 Little Bear's laneway. So she's visited the site, spoken to both the complainant and the property owner, and she suggested that they apply for a variance to the sign bylaw.
Which is what we have here in this resolution.
Correct.
Okay. Any discussion from council? Call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to 17.2, resolution 25-339, moved by Councilor Haskins, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Whereas report amend 2025-12, titled Municipal Election 2026 Alternative Voting Method, provides a detailed comparison of available voting options and associated costs. And whereas the report recommends continuing with the internet-only voting method, which was successfully implemented in the 2018 and 2022 municipal elections. And whereas internet voting is the most cost-effective and least staff-intensive option, while also enhancing accessibility and convenience for electors, including seasonal residents. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the use of internet-only voting as the method of voting for the 2026 municipal election in accordance with the provisions of the Municipal Elections Act 1996. And further, the Council supports the Township's continued participation in the Westbury Sound Municipal Group purchasing arrangement to secure group pricing with IntelliVote Systems, Inc. for the provision of internet voting services. Discussion? Councilor Ryan?
I would like to thank you, Carly, for putting together all this information, and I didn't realize realize how much information there was to be gotten. I now recognize it's a huge amount of work just to put this paper together. I just want to say thank you.
No problem.
And there's substantially more to have those other options for voting. I didn't think it'd be that steep, but it's quite a bit. A lot more work, obviously.
Yeah, in addition to the cost, too, I had a couple of questions about the, because I know it used to be a ballot box, but there are a lot of things that go with that. And I'm wondering if they're still in place for something like a ballot box as an alternative. One of them dealt with the advance poll. Does that still happen if you put in as a ballot box? Do you still need an advance poll?
We could offer that, then the staff time would increase. With the internet only, last election we had a 10-day period where electors could come in and use the township's laptop to place their vote. It is during office hours, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. If council wanted to change the hours for the next election, we could do that as well to accommodate for a weekend day for advance polls, or an evening, or a few evenings. So yes, for a ballot box, we could offer advanced polling days as well, just it would be at a higher cost than what I've calculated here, because it was only calculated for the election day.
And the people who have come in, were there any comments from them for extra help with the computer? Was it like the ballot box that they were actually filling in, or did they say anything? Or? Maybe you weren't part of that, I don't know.
No, I was at that point. People that were unfamiliar, uncomfortable with using a computer, were very comfortable with either myself or Mary assisting them in the process, making them feel dignified and ensuring that they are, you know, using their democratic right to vote. We are trusted municipal staff employees that are able to assist these individuals that may not be computer literate or computer comfortable using technology.
The other question I had about used to be with the ballot box, the idea of a proxy, is that still part of it, or is it, I don't want to put you on the spot here, because I know things keep changing too. It used to be you could have one proxy, I think, to come in and vote for you, but if you had the ballot box situation. Now, with Intellivote, of course, you have no idea who's voting for whom, but I'm talking about proxies, but anyway. I just wonder if that's still part of the ballot box if we made that available. But
I didn't research that portion of it.
No. Yeah. Other questions from council? I think this is an important enough issue. I'll put it out to council, but we'll open it to the public as well for discussion. I know going back a decade plus, this is quite controversial, the whole idea of going to the sticking with the ballot box or going to the internet, and it happened to be Intellivote even at that time, I think, that got the contract. And there were numerous meetings and discussions, and this is what came down, as you say, the last two elections, and we haven't had too many hiccups, I don't think, that we're aware of anyway with the Intellivote. I guess the one question that we always put out there, we haven't run into it yet, but we could, if there's a recount. How does Intellivote do that, or can they? I know here we had a recount in the past, and actually another person was elected. It was that close. So the numbers did change. Now, there was always a question, too, with a recount, is the second one accurate? You don't know how often you can do it, but the second one cancels the first one, so that's really the way it's done. And they even get down to pulling names out of a hat at one point, which is in the legislation, so it is all legal. But I'm just wondering how Intellivote does it. If you're that close, if you're within one or two votes, and somebody requests a recount, can they do it? Because it's already inserted into the their program, into their internet connections, and I'm just not sure whether they're going to get any different answer the second time around.
We can further investigate that and bring that with the processes, I'm sure how they do it, but we can bring that back to council.
I think you'd mentioned that as far as the saving costs, that all except Whitestone, I guess, have gone to the into a group situation for IntelliVote.
Correct.
And Whitestone is going with IntelliVote, telephone, and mail-in ballot, which complicates matters. I don't know how they're doing it, how they're coordinating it, but that's why I think the issue came up. Do you want to increase it in any way? Not to get rid of the IntelliVote or the internet voting, but to add more options for people. I think we had around 50-52% turnout last election, and we're always trying to increase that. You would think with the computer it would increase, but really hasn't an awful lot. Councilor Zulak.
So at our last council meeting, I spoke in great detail about the voting issue, and so my thoughts were not to eliminate the IntelliVote, like the electronic voting, but to also have a ballot box. So that's my how I feel, and I haven't changed my feelings on that. But that's all I have to say on that. I'm not going to drive it on, because I went into great detail as to why and everything.
I know a couple of councilors, or one in particular, has mentioned the cost that's outlined here for to doing the ballot box. Is that a concern?
For me?
Yes, I put that out there. Now that we have the cost of, and maybe we have it for the people here, it might be in your notes, but what's the approximate cost if we went to ballot box and kept the IntelliVote as well? You mentioned all of the training that would have to take place. We'd have to go right back to doing what we did years ago.
So internet and ballot. I've also, telephone was also in there too, was $39,759, whereas internet only was $4,109.
Primarily because it requires a lot of labor, if I'm right, from reading your memo. Is that your view too, Carmen?
Correct, and
okay.
Yes. And then just the materials as well.
Okay, I opened it up to the public at one point. If council's agreeable and not hearing too much, we have a resolution on the table.
Were you asking for more information though before that motion, or you're fine?
No, I just read it out, and that's what
okay.
The resolution reads. And if you're okay, we'll put it to a vote.
Okay.
I'll call the question. All those in favor? Opposed?
Abstain.
Abstain. Okay. Well, if it's
I
not,
know.
Okay, so it's just it's.
But I'm abstaining.
To 17.3, we have resolution 25-340, moved by Councilor Keckman, second by Councilor Ryan. Whereas some municipalities within the Prairie Sound District have recently expressed their intent to withdraw from the North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority, NBMCA, for the purpose of assuming responsibility for septic system approvals. And whereas MPP Graydon Smith has initiated the process of amending the Ontario Building Code to permit municipalities to assume enforcement responsibility for on-site sewage systems, and whereas the Township of McKellar recognizes that assuming this responsibility would place significant additional demands on the Township's building department, including the need for specialized training and increased staffing. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does not wish to pursue the transfer of enforcement responsibility for on-site sewage systems from the North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority at this time, and further that the Township will continue to monitor provincial developments and reassess this matter should circumstances change in the future. Discussion. This goes back a number of years with the planning boards, and some municipalities at that time were able to do a one-window approach sort of thing, and they could do the, through their CBO and also through their other staff members, they could do the building inspection and have to go to a provincial outside authority like North Bay Mattawa and wait for their response for the sewage. And the members of the planning board at that time all considered it. It didn't get anywhere at the time. Graydon Smith, now our MPP, is pursuing it. And a number of municipalities are interested in doing that one-window approach to make it easier for the applicant. The question we have, of course, do we have the personnel, the staff to do it, the expertise? I'm not sure whether all the problems have been resolved, I guess, with North Bay Mattawa. We don't want things delayed, certainly, for the applicant. We could certainly consider with the CBO, maybe an inspector as such with qualifications to do this particular part of it. We haven't investigated that at all. I just know that we have a tight time frame to make a decision on this, and Graydon Smith is collecting the names at the time of the townships who are interested, and he'll take that to higher levels in government and say that these people are interested. And it's something we've tried to do. We've got an example now with our official plan, for instance. We're relying on the province. They're the ones responsible for passing or making changes to our official plan, and it's been over a year now since we've initiated this, and they're short-staffed, and we're just on a waiting list, really, for them. We may or may not get it. So any opportunity, I think, that individual municipalities get to go on their own and provide the service, leave the province out of it, because you can't control the response time of the province. I think that's sort of a carrot that the municipalities are looking at. Archipelago has done it on their own. And again, that's something we can investigate, how successful it would be, how many people did they need to carry out the program. And I'm just wondering whether we want to get on board with some of the other municipalities and try this. The recommendation is that we stick with North Bay Mattawa, but it's council's decision, so in the comments from council, I guess. We really don't have any detailed report, which is, again, unfortunate. We've run into this before, looking for the pros and cons of staying with or going on our own, and costs involved and that sort of thing. What education an inspector would need, that would be useful from our CBO, who would be heading us up, but we don't have much of that. It was supplied, I guess, from a previous comment that was made. I'm not sure. Was that in the package? It wasn't in the package. He did make comments a few years ago, I guess, when there were some problems with North Bay Mattawa, but at this point, he says things have changed around there with the new CEO, and that things are much more, I would say, compatible and not holding us up. We haven't heard from residents necessarily, but maybe our CBO has, whether applications are being delayed because of North Bay Mattawa. But I think, we need information, but unfortunately, Graydon's not waiting. He needs it in August, and to take this to the upper levels of government. So I want to get council's opinions on it, whether you want to pursue it, look into it further. We might not be on this time. It does say at this time. Whether you think we can strike it on our own, we won't be on our own necessarily. The other townships are doing it. It's just that we've heard from our CBO that he probably can't do it all himself. So we'll have to make some changes. Councillor Zulak.
So I spoke to the CBO, and he forwarded me a copy of his report from last year, and he CC'd you, Carly.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been good to have for council to read through.
I did forward it to council after receiving it. It just didn't make the public agenda package.
Okay. And then I was wondering, so like we have our bylaw officer, we have a contract. So could we not contract somebody to do the inspections and everything? Chris, according to Chris, he has all the qualifications and everything to do it. He would just oversee a person that we had contracted, because there are people out there that do that. They just do not have the qualifications for buildings and stuff, but they have legal and septic and all of the other stuff, but not for construction of buildings. And I know there's a lot of construction companies that put in septic beds, and they have their own people that go out and do the septic inspections themselves. So I'm wondering, could we go that route? Any, like, I'm thinking along the same line as the mayor. If we can get away from the government in any way and do things on our own, it's a lot faster and probably more efficient. Because, like, with our official plan, they were to have that answers back to us within 90 days, and it's been over a year. Now, if it was turned around, we'd be in deep. You know what? So that's what I was wondering if we could, and that would have been nice to have Chris here, because when I spoke with Chris, and we did the pros and cons, and it wasn't as straightforward as no, we can't do it. He was thinking that maybe, you know, it would be possible. Like, he himself would not feel totally comfortable doing it on his own, but if we maybe had somebody, you know, on a contract that would do this. But then it's the time frame.
Councilor Ryan?
Do we have any idea how much the Conservation Authority earns from the inspections that they do?
No, I don't have those figures.
Okay. Because, I mean, that would kind of be the equation if we wanted to hire a contractor or whatever by a different name. Then it would be good to know that the revenues would be hopefully at least equal to, hopefully more, than the expenses would be for that contract if we decide to go that route. But I don't want you to go to a lot of work. It would just, I hadn't thought of it until Debbie brought it up, but I think it would be interesting at least. So
I will add that the chief building official for the North Bay Manitowoc Conservation Authority also called me as well, introduced himself. He's recognized that the relationship with the township before has been strained, and also the relationship with our ratepayers in doing these septic permits, and he is now wanting to mend that relationship.
Okay.
He's suggested a deputation to council fairly soon to reintroduce himself, well, to reintroduce himself, but also the Conservation Authority, what they do. Perhaps he could provide those figures as well. He can also touch on short-term rentals and the complaints around those for septic permits and obligations.
Okay.
So we're looking to have him attend a meeting in September, hopefully September 2nd.
Councilor Izula.
So now that you struck on that, I phoned, his name is Chris.
Yes.
I phoned him. And to my astonishment, he would not reveal anything to me. And I said, I'm a counselor with the Township of McKellar. And he said, I'll only deal with your staff. Now, that is pretty shocking when you're a counselor or the mayor or whatever, and you call North Bay Mattawa and they won't talk to you. They have to go through the staff.
Chris shared with me he's also a counselor as well in a different municipality, and he just wanted to put that professionalism behind it. He wanted the municipality to reach out to him and not an individual counselor.
No.
He
explained that to me.
Yeah.
But I still don't agree with that. You know what I mean? I just don't agree with that. Like, the staff is working for the council.
Yes, and if there's information that you want us to get from
these
agencies, please feel free to email us, and we'll get that information and we will forward it to council as we did when received it.
And if I might guess, I mean, that might represent office politics too, on the basis that if you're working for the Conservation Authority, you don't want to be out of business and potentially affecting you, right? Not
but if you're just wanting figures, like I just wanted to know how many applications were put forward in 2024.
Don't talk to anybody about this issue.
In 2024, I said I don't want names, I don't want anything. I just want to know how many applications.
Yeah.
And by this year, it looks like they had 24 applications. I mean, that's not that many. And this year, 6 so far. I mean, I think we could handle it. But then it needs to be investigated, because you'd have to get all the files, previous files and everything. But I just think the further away you get from the government and doing things on your own is the better.
Is the North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority classed as being under the government? I don't think so.
No,
are they?
No. But still.
They receive a slight amount of funding from the provincial government, but no other
yes and no. There are a number of organizations that they say they're not under the government. In a sense, they are. I'll give you an example of MPAC. They're supposed to be independent as well, but they get marching orders lots of times from higher ups. And the same thing, even though North Nevada is independent, supposedly, we ran into this with the Land Division planning board that I was on for years. It was supposed to be an independent planning board. I don't think the, well, you wouldn't have two consecutive meetings where the provincial rep didn't show up and say, this is how you're to vote. This is what should be done. So there is something from above as well. And I think what Councillor Zulak is saying is correct, that as long as you have that, and we may have a good CAO, whatever, at this point. But again, is that relationship going to continue? I run into the same problem, as she mentions, years back, trying to collect information. Staff wouldn't talk to me in any other their municipalities. They had to go through staff. It's the way it's been organized. Whether it's right or wrong, that's what they tend to do. We ran into it as a municipality as recently as the last council, I guess. We've got some councilor members who sat there. I think it was more with our Intact Insurance, was it not? That tried to get information from them, and they wouldn't speak to anybody, not even to council. It was just to an individual, I think, at that point. And I don't know whether that's the appropriate way to do it or not. Because it was a municipal contract, and yet they treated it, it seemed like, as an individual, a private contract. It could only speak to this one person who worked for the township, as you said. So that's a concern with North Bay Mattawa. I don't know if things have turned or not, and it'd be nice to have a report. It's just unfortunate that things are happening so quickly. Do we need more information? And I don't know whether the 19th gives us enough time, whether Chris can be here to talk to those different questions that we have. It'd be great to have him at the meeting. Maybe that's still enough time before Grayton takes something to the different level. But there's quite a bit of information to gather prior to making any decision. And I don't think Grayton's representative, that's where we got the email from, James King. I don't think he's going to wait much longer. I think it has to be this month, the way I understood it, before Grayton acts with the names that he's got. So, council has to make the call on this, whether you want to right now say no or try to investigate it further. Councillor Cuckin.
So, regarding governance for North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority, was formed under the Conservation Authorities Act of Ontario in 1972 at the request of its member municipalities. It is governed by a 12-member board of directors appointed by the 10-member municipalities. But
do they have any provincial reps on it?
10 appointed by the 10-member municipalities. Doesn't say anything about provincial representatives, but there was the province was does fund them a slight amount because there was some correspondence sent out a couple of years ago where they wanted the municipalities to be aware that the very small amount, it was less than 10%, the province funds them, was going part of that was going to be cut, so they were sort of wanted the municipalities to be aware of that.
And to chip in?
I
wasn't part of it,
yeah,
so
I can't remember exactly.
Further discussion?
I could weigh in a little bit in the fact that I have worked with a lot of the installers in the area and North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority, and I never really heard any of our installers really complain with them, and I actually seen them actually working with them on sites, and there always seemed to be a good relationship, and I never really heard complaints of the relationships they had, and again, I don't think I heard complaints from any from ratepayers saying, "Oh, dealing with the North Bay Mattawa Conservation Authority was a pain, and I don't like them and all that." I never heard that, and I dealt with them personally about 3 or 4 years ago, and I found it very user friendly, and they were friendly, and did inspections when they were asked to. So, It seems to be working, and so I would lean toward thinking that, yeah, if it's working, I don't see any rush for us to all of a sudden try to jump ship into the unknown. If we can't handle it ourselves, I would say we stay with them for now. I'm sure the option is there if Braden, you know, does open the doors, that we could do it ourselves at some point if that's a decision they're going to make. That's wonderful. That gives us options going forward, but that may not be as rosy as it sounds either. So, because these people are professionals in their trade, so as far as that motion goes, I'm basically saying I would be in favor of that motion, as at least to keep us rolling for now. So,
yeah, I wouldn't hold out hope that you know, later you can jump into the game, because as I said, going back over a decade, a member of municipalities of the planning board wanted to do it then. No, some of them were able to do it on their own. Like I say, Archipelago they can do the whole one-to-window approach. They can do everything.
Yeah. And maybe down the road, it could be a possibility we could partner with another municipality. There's some municipalities out there I don't think I would want to partner with, or that would be the end of any future development.
Yeah. Don't name any names, just yet. the other thing, too, is I just think of some municipalities in the area have official plan amendment capability. We don't. And it's something we've been trying to get. And it doesn't surface that often where you get this opportunity to rule out the province or an outside source. If you can do it on your own, I think that the opportunity arises. But you're right, there's still a lot of unknowns at this point if we tried to do it on our own. Councilor Zulak.
So he wants to know by the end of August, so we have a meeting. At least if we talk to Chris, we had a meeting. If Chris comes to our next council meeting, we still have time. If you don't feel that we could do it, at least we could have talked to Chris and see, you know, he may have more information that we can use in the future. If you don't think it's viable to do it now, we still have time to send that in.
Other council's opinions. One is for, one's deferring. So, Councilor Ryan.
I'm happy with the resolution the way that it's written, because we aren't saying no and we aren't saying yes. We're just saying not at this time, which leaves it open. So I think that's possibly the best solution we can get at this time. And if this information is available to us when Chris is available, then maybe we can find something there that helps us make a decision. But I'm happy with the resolution the way it's written at the moment. So
when you say at this time, that means it wouldn't matter what Chris says. If you're going to go with this one, you've already said no. And that's why I think what Councilor Zulak was getting at. Do we have time at least to get Chris's opinion on it rather than a one-line report? And I caution again, I'm not trying to change votes or anything, but at this time, I'm not saying it means forever, but very difficult in the future to get back into that. It may take a long period of time.
Well, we also say at the end that we'll reassess this matter should circumstances change in the future. Right?
But is the opportunity still there, is what I'm saying. You don't get the choice. If you say, okay, now we'll join, they'll say, no, you had your chance.
Yeah.
So.
I understand.
Councilor Peck, your thoughts on this quickly before I put this to a vote.
So basically, Braden Smith is taking this before the House and listing out the names of the municipalities that are going to be added to the Ontario regulation, probably. And so, at a future date, if there's other municipalities that want to take on the inspection of septic systems, then there'll probably be another amendment to the regulation or an addition, or
I don't know how often they come around, to be honest. So not very often. We've tried to get Belvedere Heights, that's going back probably two decades, the whole proportional assessment that they put out and voting and who should sit on the board, they just ignored us. On Belvedere Heights, this is the way they've done it, this is what they continue to do. So it doesn't come that often, I don't think, and a lot depends on the government in power, whether they
it's kind of like the official plan amendments. You know, certain municipalities can do their own official plan amendments, but certain ones can't, and that opportunity only comes so often. Which would be a great thing if we could do that, then we wouldn't be waiting a year.
Or more.
Councilor Kaka.
So maybe if we can get some clarification on how that process works, because Graydon Smith has initiated the process of amending the Ontario Building Code to permit municipalities to assume enforcement responsibility for on-site sewage systems. So I think we need some clarification of how that the changes in the Ontario Building Code to allow permit municipalities to assume enforcement responsibility, is it open-ended?
So I'm hearing more information. Is the 19th soon enough to get more information? I don't know.
Sounds like we need two motions or more to that motion saying that we're going to stay by ourselves for now, but we would be in favor of the municipalities having the power of going on their own.
Just not ours.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it says MPP Smith would like to have all resolutions in by the end of August. So August 19th, that would be meet the deadline criteria.
Well, it gives more time for Chris to comment, certainly, if he's coming on the 19th. I think that'd be useful to get more research information before we make a decision, but we can make a decision tonight if we want. I'll soon put this to a vote.
Well, yeah, and I'm, like I said before, I'll vote in favor of that, but I would maybe also be in favor of a motion at the next council meeting saying that we would be in favor of municipalities going on their own if that is their wish to endorse Graydon going forward. So just thought I'd throw that out.
Yeah, well, that may help him, but I get the impression he's doing it regardless of what we say. But
yeah, probably, because he'll have enough support without whatever we do.
I think a detailed report, yes. You know, like you said, this is a brief report here that says that adding further enforcement requirements for on-site sewage systems to the township building department would require additional training and staffing. Well, the report, you know, is that possible? You know, can we partner with other municipalities, staff that are overseeing the septic system inspection process?
As long as it's not one that Councillor Haskins doesn't want to deal with.
Well, you're opening up a can of worms in a way. Is yes, who would you be dealing with in the future if you did change? We could have a lot of people sitting here saying, we're not being given our permits for our septic beds, and it's your fault, council. You know, that could happen right now. We don't have anything to do with it. It's done by a professional company, and great. Or if we all of a sudden decide, okay, we're going to not have our taxpayers deal with the North Bay Mattawa, you're going to deal with our employee in the office. I'd rather not go that route.
Okay, well, I think we've hashed this over enough. I'll put it to a vote then. All those in favor of this resolution? Opposed? Deferred?
Oh, sorry. Deferred.
You're voting twice.
Okay, cancel that. Deferred. I forgot we were doing a deferral.
So three for deferred.